This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. It's now easier and cheaper than ever before to start your own blog or website. For just $6.95 per month, you get unlimited hosting, one-click installation of WordPress, and a .com domain name. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show. And finally, this show is also made possible by the friends of SQPN. You can join us in our mission to reach out to the ends of the world with great podcasts by supporting us with a monthly donation. Go to sqpn.com for more information. And thank you so much for your support. And this ominous music marks the beginning of yet another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, our podcast dedicated to this wonderful series on ABC about fairy tales and Storybrooke. And today we will be talking about some guy named Frederick. And joining me today are Deborah and also Lisa Jones. Hey, Lisa, good morning.
Oh, I'm excited to talk about this one because maybe you can help me with some characters.
I will do my best because this was a very controversial episode. Not many people liked it. but that might have actually have been the result of some very good writing. But we'll talk about that. So Deborah is also joining us, our resident Disney expert.
Hello.
Hello. This is a little secret for our listeners. We're still recording this on leap day. It's to say we just recorded the other one about Skin Deep. But let's say you might hear this a couple of days later. So Deborah, how was the 24 hours of Disney World? Did you survive?
I always survive. It's actually not anything unique to me because of past jobs.
Yes. But 24 hours of Disney, can there be too much Disney in one day?
Yeah, there can.
Okay, that was an honest answer. Let's talk about today's episode, and that is, what was the title again? Where on earth is Mr. Frederick? Or what, something with Frederick. Where did he go? Where did he come from? Help me out here, because I don't know.
Yeah. This was a reference back to the King Midas episode with Abigail. And so we start in fairy tale world with Prince Charming fleeing his father. Evidently, the wedding is off, and he's fleeing the horses. And he runs into Abigail, and she helps him, and they have a discussion. And she says that she doesn't love him either and doesn't really want to marry him, that she's in love with somebody else, this man named Frederick. And we realize that he is the man that her father, King Midas, touched, that we had a reference to a couple episodes ago. And he is hanging out in the woods like a statue in gold, in his knight suit. And she tells Prince Charming about a lake where you can go and you get water from the lake. Your wishes are fulfilled. And so he, being the brave knight, the brave prince, he goes and decides he will get that water for her because he has nothing to lose. It turns out that there is a siren in the lake who tries to lure you to your death. And Prince Charming fights her and stays focused, even though she becomes Snow White, and tries to convince him that she is his love and being with her is better than the real thing. Anyway, he fights her, kills her, and brings the water back to Abigail, who pours it on Frederick, and he comes back to life. And they tell Prince Charming, James, whatever he wants, they'll help him with. And he goes to find Snow White, and Red Riding Hood tells him that she is gone and hasn't seen her since the wedding was called off. So that is fairy tale. And then real world seemed to be where all the drama is this time for a change. We have David, and help me if I get the names all mixed up. David and Catherine. Catherine wants a fresh start. He talks to Mary Margaret. They decide they're going to tell Catherine about their little affair. David says, I'll tell her. And then what he tells Catherine isn't the whole truth. He doesn't tell her about Mary Margaret. He just says that he needs some space. He's not connecting with her. It's not working. So Catherine, distraught, goes and talks to Regina. Regina spills the beans, tells her about Mary Margaret and David's affair. Catherine confronts Mary Margaret at school in front of everybody. in front of a guy who looks familiar to everybody, or a guy they focus in on. And then Mary Margaret confronts David and says, this hurts too much. We can't be together. It's not right. And we find out that the guy she's looking at, the guy at the school, was really Frederick. So we know Frederick's showing up in real world. At the same time, we find out that the writer's name, and that he goes on a date with Emma to a wishing well. And after that, they have nice discussions. After that, we see him writing a book that looks strangely like the Once Upon a Time book that is missing. In fact, we see the Once Upon a Time book. And then all of a sudden, the book shows up in the metal case, in the rain gutter, at Emma's car. So Emma takes it and takes it back to Henry, and Operation Cobra is back on. So that is it in a nutshell.
Absolutely. So a little bit of, actually, the fairy tale aspect of this story was not as important as the character development and the whole story between Snow White and Prince Charming, a.k.a. Mary Margaret and David. The story of the knight turning to gold, of course, is the most obvious reference to, well, not really a fairy tale, but to mythology, as is the story of the siren. So let's begin with the analysis of that.
These stories are classics. It's a reason we all know them. They're a way for us to deal with our world. Well, it doesn't always make sense. Believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
Well, no happy ending yet for Mary Margaret, even though she emphasizes how important happy endings are for people. But that might be for later in this season. So two stories, basically two fairy tales. The Golden Knights. Now, we had to basically ask the chat room to see if they had any idea where this would come from. What we've been able to find is that in the original tale of King Midas, of course, he is known for his ability to turn everything into gold. And in one of the versions of this story, one of the retellings, he's actually touching his daughter and she turns into a golden statue. I'm not sure if that happens by accident or if that was on purpose, but that is probably where they got the inspiration for the Golden Knight. There was also some talk about, I think I just clicked away the page where I had that, some other story about a golden knight or a knight in golden armor, but that seemed to be a little bit too far-fetched to have anything to do with the reference that we see in this episode. So I'm sticking with this idea that it was just kind of a play on what Midas did to his own daughter. And then we've got the appearance of a siren. Now, a siren is not really a fairy tale character, although there might be fairy tales, and also sirens appear sometimes in pirate stories. But originally, the sirens are from Greek mythology. They were dangerous creatures. I'm reading this from Wikipedia. Portrayed as seductresses, well, that's clearly also the case in this episode, who lured nearby sailors with their enchanting music and voices to shipwreck on the rocky coast of their island. Roman poets placed them on an island called Sirenum Scopuli. In some later rationalized traditions, the literal geography of the flowery island of Anthemusa or is fixed, sometimes on Cape Pelorum, and then some other islands, which are totally irrelevant to what we are trying to explain here. So they were considered to be the daughters of a river god, Achelous. I think there were some differences in the way that the Greeks told the story, and then the Roman writers had their own version, where the sirens in the Greek mythology were not really found at sea. They were described to be in a meadow starred with flowers, whereas the Roman version did link them more to the sea as daughters of forces. And then in the Odyssey, Homer also talks about sirens, but in according to Homer, there are only two sirens. And then, of course, later this whole mythology evolved in folklore, and these creatures were turned into mermaids. And so in a lot of languages, Spanish, French, Italian, Polish, Romanian, and Portuguese, the word for mermaid is actually siren. So it's sirena, sirene. And so they turn into these half fish, half woman creatures, where the upper side is always the woman. The other way around would probably be less interesting,
attractive.
So, but in the original Greek mythology, they were not, you know, they were not mermaids. So, when I read the description of this episode, I was like, oh, this is where, of course, they're going to introduce us to the Little Mermaid. But I think they actually went with the original Greek kind of depiction of this treacherous creature, and they will probably keep the mermaid thing for a later episode where they can really kind of focus on the Disney version of the Little Mermaid. There's also some mention in a translation of the Bible into Latin by Saint Jerome. He actually translated the Hebrew tenim, which means jackals, by the word siren, which then led to the confusion, are there sirens in the Bible? But actually, that's probably just not a very good translation. And that's all I had to say about sirens.
Oh. I love how they're constantly showing us all the darkness in the fairy tale world, all the danger. Mm-hmm. You can have the promise of your every wish fulfilled by getting the water. But to do that, there's this evil siren. And I thought they did a good job with it. It showed James really struggling with her. I don't mean physically struggling, though he did. I mean the mental struggle of he's just lost his true love and he feels hopeless. And that's why he said he had nothing to lose. And then it would be so easy to succumb to her. But I really am Snow White. I am the one you love. Come be with me. And so it was, I guess it was very nice to see the contrast. From fairy tale world to the real world.
I was wondering if this happened after Snow White took that potion to forget about her love for Prince Charming, or is this before?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume it's after because Red said she never came back, so she hasn't seen her. We know it's right after he called off the wedding. Oh, we remember Grumpy, or one of the dwarves, mm-hmm. came running in and said, good news, he called off the wedding, and she had that bottle and went, what wedding?
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So this probably is just right after.
So which explains his kind of despair and it's like, yeah, what else have I got to lose? And it also explains why he is at first a bit enchanted by this creature when it turns into what looks like Snow White, and then he recognizes that it's just the appearance, but there's no, it's not really her. He doesn't feel the love, the true love, and that's a telltale. Thing that gives it away. So I thought it was, of course, in symbolism, very interesting that he, having known love, he knows how to recognize it, and he has learned to go skin deep, to go beyond the appearance, and to see straight through the kind of the visual trick, and sense that there is that there's no love at all there. It's just basically an elaborate prank to kill him. And then the whole water element, water here in this episode has two meanings, kind of contrasting opposite meanings. It's presented as a source of renewal, of redemption, recovery. You know, it the water, if you drink it, it will bring back what you might have lost, it will bring you what's precious. And then the water in at least the pool where this siren is hiding is the symbol of death, and it's the deep water that can kill you, which is a symbolism that you will find in mythology, in many stories, in pirate stories, where the water, the sea, is both where you can find treasure, but also where you can, it can also kill you. And let's not forget the very important symbolic value of water in the biblical context and in the Christian, even in Christian liturgy. The baptism completely focuses on water as its core material as its core symbol, where the water has both meanings. It is, it's something that washes you, that, that renews you, that cleanses you and brings you life. But at the same time, the immersion into the water is also symbolic of dying to yourself, dying to your old life, and then being reborn from that water. And that's kind of what happens to Prince Charming here. He's pulled into the water, and it's as if, you know, his old life is at that moment, he manages to actually make a new start. When he comes out of the water, he's again this valiant prince that is, you know, at least he's not able to bring back his own love, but at least he can bring back the love of this princess, of Abigail, and that's what he does. So I love that whole symbolism there in the story. Let's see where we go from here. Well, of course we need to address this whole Storybrooke part of the of the story, because that's where most of the controversy was. And before we go there, let's play a jingle.
I wish, but nothing changes. I wish I was better at wishing.
Now, when it comes to the wishes of the audience, you've got this phenomenon of the once upon a time shippers. And I was first made aware of this whole phenomenon on the internet when we were doing our show about Harry Potter, The Secrets of Harry Potter. And there were a lot of what they called, you know, Potter shippers, and they were just fantasizing about all the possible romantic relationships between all the characters, including Voldemort. And it was just a very scary part of the internet. turns out that there is also this whole, the same people probably are now diverting their attention to Once Upon a Time, and they're speculating about all the possible romantic entanglements. And and number one on the list of these shippers is, of course, a romance between David and Mary Margaret, and this impossible love in Storybrooke that seems to be doomed, and yet everybody is at least a lot of people are rooting for them and are hoping that somehow true love will return to Storybrooke, despite the fact that David, of course, is married. And then you get this episode where David is clearly someone who is not honest, who doesn't choose, who basically not only betrays his wife but also Mary Margaret, and Mary Margaret also doesn't really come across as honest and strong. Her morals seem to literally, even visually, going downhill. Did you notice that in the first few episodes of Once Upon a Time, she's all buttoned up, and in this episode, the buttons slowly, you know, they are
wearing
loosened.
Less little, showing more shoulders.
She's, yep.
Nothing suggestive, of course, but for her, the difference between the two has been
absolutely. And of course, this is on purpose, and it sets her up for future developments. We know that this episode is part of the story that they want to tell us, and this is not the end. It's not going to end like this. There's going to be some development. We don't know exactly what. It's going to be probably surprising, but first, in order to have a satisfactory kind of resolution of tension, you first need to create that tension. And well, they did a good job, because the audience was mad and they started to send hate mail to the actor who plays David. The poor guy. He was like, "Yeah, I'm just an actor, you know. I'm just
writer, not the actor.
I read my lines." I totally recognize it, though, because it happens to me as well. I've got this TV show on Dutch television, and, you know, I always have to learn other people's lines. And sometimes they show documentaries, and it irks people, and they think that I personally film every single minute of that episode. It's like, I don't even know what was in that particular segment that you're so upset about. It was, you know, some other crew that filmed that. I have nothing to do with that. But, you know, that's the way television works. It's all real. So, Lisa, tell me your take on what happens there romantically.
You know, my first immediate reaction was just, I hated it. I mean, I just was upset because you could see it coming. They've been building up to this. Mm-hmm. And I want to see that strong, you know, male character in the real world. And thinking about it now that it's, you know, not immediately after, I get it. They, especially this episode, they're really trying to show you the contrast between fairy tale world. It's, you're a hero. It's right and wrong. I mean, there's clear choices, you know, and you do what you do. And in the real world, things are a little more gray and messy, and people aren't, you know, heroes or villains. I mean, it's messed up a little bit more, and how it's hard to make those choices. And I'm trying to go with that for David, because it really bothered me. It bothered me that Mary Margaret, you know, goes along with it. But I like the way this episode ended between them, and I think it'll be a great kind of jumping off point for the rest of the season, at least. Because of course you can't get them together this early. I mean, that would be crazy.
I know, that would be jumping the shark.
Yeah, you got to build on the angst a little bit more. So I don't know. I don't want to watch it again, though.
Isn't it part of the curse that this happens? That they are unable to really, you know, be truly themselves?
They know they're supposed to be together, but they just can't seem to figure it out. And that, you're right, that's the curse. Regina said, I want you all to be miserable and apart from the one you love. And even though they know they're supposed to be together, they're still apart and they still are miserable. So they just haven't broken that curse yet and seen through it.
And we know that in order to break the curse, there needs to be true love. And since at least the character of David hasn't made a real choice and kind of tries to play both ladies, there is no love there. It's basically he's trying to preserve himself to survive in this situation, but there is no real commitment to either of the two.
I guess I had a more cynical look and that I was like, oh, he wants to have his cake and eat it too.
That would be evil.
Yeah, but part of me is like, well, I know people who swear they've been in love with two people at the same time, so it's not improbable that he couldn't possibly love two women at the same time.
But you know, they did. I liked the fact that they showed, I guess, real world results of what happens. You know, it wasn't just, oh, okay, you're going to leave me and, you know, that's fine, whatever, you go be with her. I mean, they showed the passion and the messiness that comes with this.
Yes.
You know, real world, what happens? I mean,
consequences.
Consequences of this. It wasn't just, oh, okay, whatever. You know, Catherine confronts Mary Margaret, the whole town finds out.
Yes.
You know, and she's got Tramp written on her car. And
I felt for
you know
Catherine.
Who did that, right?
Yes, the queen, or Regina.
Spray paint doesn't come off that easily, so whatever.
Yeah.
No, but
you felt for her. But at the same time, you felt for Catherine because...
Yes. At first, I didn't like her at all because I was like, Jack, you're not supposed to be married to Prince Charming. Come on. I actually thought that she was she was probably working for Regina and it was all a scam and there was no real marriage and that they were trying to lure David into thinking that he was married because of his amnesia after his coma. But in this episode, I was like, "Wow, no! She's genuinely distraught. She's betrayed, and she hurts. And she tries to find some kind of consolation with the person that actually is behind it all, who caused it all. The irony of that embrace."
And did you notice though? She picked up. She's like, "You're not my friend at all."
Yeah.
She tells Regina, "You're not my friend at all."
Uh huh.
Which I'm like, "Oh, good. At least she realizes that."
Well, I forgot to mention that Catherine tried to give her blessing to David and Mary Margaret at the end by leaving a letter and then trying to leave town. And of course she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody does. She ended up actually disappearing. So
yes, mysterious.
I'd forgotten about that. That Regina broke into David's house, I guess it was, and took the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't know what happened to
Catherine. Where do you think she is?
Out in the woods. Because she can't leave.
I'm thinking she's down there with Belle.
That's what I was thinking. I think she's in the psych ward.
Or she's locked up with the hearts. know.
Oh, no, that would be terrible. Oh, speaking of the hearts, I always thought that the keys, the skeleton keys that Regina carries around, that those were for the boxes with the hearts. Now it turns out that she has a key to every house. At least it seems that she has a key to every house in the town.
Right, or a skeleton key that opens every door.
Oh, that could be too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved when she went to but I always kind of, like you said, been angry with Catherine, you know, like she was a not good person. Uh-huh. And I think they tried to make us think that. I really think the writers kind of set her up that way. Remember, as that tight-lipped, we all just thought she was shallow and a snob or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, she was really in love with somebody else. And so finding out in fairy tale world, that there's this other dimension to her, and that that's why she was not nice to Prince Charming, you know, in the carriage and everything else.
Yes.
And then maybe in the, you find out in the real world that she's miserable too, because she's being kept away from the person she loves. So the curse is affecting her as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
who happens to be a coach at the high school that she's at.
Indeed. Indeed. Isn't he like the sports teacher or something like that?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
And he comes after her at the end.
Right.
Well, he stumbles upon her, which,
Do you think it was by accident, or did he really follow her?
Well, no, I think it was by accident. But the funny thing is why, okay, if everybody can't leave, why are so many people driving down this highway and they get to the sign? And what do they expect to happen?
You'd think that they would notice this after a while.
Yeah, like, I always got to that sign and I can't leave.
Yeah.
No one's ever been on vacation.
It's like Truman Show, that whole village. You can't get out.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So he's the one that found her. And you realize that they're tortured and, you know, kept apart as well. And it gives you a little more empathy for Catherine's character. And, you know, having her confront Mary Margaret and seeing the drama there. At first I didn't like it. But looking back, I can see the purpose and I can see the character development and where they're going with it. And so I'm okay with it.
Are you going to email the actor that you sent that hate mail to earlier this week that you apologize?
Yes, you shouldn't have read the lines that way. I love when Mary Margaret said, David, this isn't love. What we have is something else entirely. What we have is destructive and it has to stop.
Yes.
Shouldn't be together.
And I think it's something else. It's something that she said before. It's like, we got to stop this. This shouldn't be happening. At first, when she was still buttoned up and honest, she's like, we shouldn't do this. And then they still went on and did it.
Well, and like you said, they love each other. They feel the connection, but something's not right. And now hopefully they'll go back and try to build on whatever is wrong and fix it, you know, rather than just jumping into the physical nature, you know, of that love instead of building on it from the beginning. And maybe that's supposed to be reflective of how much we have that in society, you know, do things, you feel it and you do it, but it's really for the wrong reasons or not entirely true.
Yeah. I read a very interesting forum post and I tried to find it. I clicked it away. But it was an interesting essay almost about the relationship between David and Mary Margaret. Basically saying the same is like, well, this is good stuff because it's real. It's gray in real life. This is not real life is not a fairy tale. And sometimes love can become very messy and unclear. And you've got all these entanglements and it's very difficult to decide what to do and to make the right choices. Sometimes there isn't even the right choice. And in that respect, this is good writing because it makes these two characters more, in a way, more relatable. Although, on the other hand, we are watching TV as a form of, we expect TV to be a fairy tale and to show us our ideals. And even if we cannot make those choices in real life, we at least want to see our heroes making the right choices. And so that is, I think, the interesting game that is going on where, you know, the viewers are watching this. They know that this is not fairy tale land, and yet they expect these storybook characters to behave like fairy tale characters, which they don't. And then we get mad. We get angry. I think it's wonderful. I love it when a TV series is able to do this.
Than we are in real life. You know, you want them to show you the way it can be. You know, that fantasy of getting away, you know, why people go to see movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I was talking to somebody about why we were so upset about David, is that we do expect him to make the right choice, and to see him make the wrong choice, it really upsets us, because the label of Prince Charming on him, we have that label. And so with that label becomes this whole expectation that he's going to act princely.
Yep.
So, you know, he doesn't live up to our standards.
Oh, and I think that as growing up with fairy tales, you kind of, like you said, expect them to be above it, even if they're stuck in Storybrooke in real world and they don't realize it.
Exactly.
They should somehow know that. And unrealistic expectations on our TV show characters.
Exactly.
That's the way storytelling works. Let's talk about another character that was very important in this episode, and that is August, the mysterious stranger. We see him revealing that there is actually this well, and he's really mysterious, and you keep wondering, what does he really know? He's been there before. He knows about the magical past, seems to know about the magical past of this of that place. He seems to believe in the magical power of that water, and yet there is something off, and you wonder, who is this guy? Let's talk about the well at first. Is this the same well that we saw in one of the earliest episodes of the series where, what's his name? Was it Ashley's husband falls in, or?
Oh, I'd forgotten about that.
That was also a well, and it looked exactly like this one. That was my first, like, didn't someone fall into that well?
He disappeared while he was at the well, the Cinderella's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, Cinderella. Yeah. And then, of course, we know that this guy returns in Storybrooke. So in a way, that might be the fulfillment of the magical power of the water. It brings back what is precious to you. And in this case, it brought back Ashley's friend. Mm-hmm. But we never got a good answer to what happened to him.
No, we didn't. He disappeared. I guess I assumed that Rumple had him. I don't know.
It's interesting. But anyway,
well, I also immediately, of course, thought of Snow White, and I guess that's the Disney version.
Oh, yeah. In the beginning?
I'm wishing, you know.
Yeah, the wishing song, yes.
Oh, interesting.
I won't sing for you.
The wishing well. Well, it's the what is the reason that, does he bring Emma to the well? I'm kind of fuzzy.
He does. He takes her on a date. And
let's go
for a drink. Yeah. And they end up at this wishing well in the middle of nowhere.
Why does he want Emma to drink from the well? I don't know. It's almost as if he wants to make her believe in the magic, just as what's his name? The boy?
Henry
tries to make Emma believe in the magic, or the magic kind of sub-reality. And Emma refuses, and here August seems to do the same. He's like, yeah, you got to believe in this. And apparently he knows that she has lost something precious. I mean, after all, she's not allowed to be with Henry anymore. And that's exactly what comes back to her, or what is restored. And you can wonder if that was by virtue of the water, but she ends up with Henry at the end. And there's also the return of the fairy tale book, which incidentally he is repairing, and he does that by washing the pages in water. And at first I thought it was just to clean up the book, because it
you
had
thought
been
he was cleaning it.
Well, that was what I first thought, because the book was of course unearthed while they were tearing down the castle, the playground, and then I was like, now wait a minute, no, perhaps he's actually washing the papers in the water to restore the story.
I thought he was just making a copy of the book and then making a copy for Henry, and
I thought he was
piecing it together.
You think? I've not seen.
He was creating a new book, but changing certain things, and he was washing the papers to make them look old. You know, like how you put paper in tea.
Yep. I thought, well, and perhaps it's deliberately ambiguous here, but I thought that he was using the water from the well to repair the story, because remember, the pages were torn out, and so there's part of the ending of the book is missing, and that might be, and he's a writer, so he's there to make stories. And so perhaps the water plays a role in, you know, kind of the restoration of this book. And perhaps it's possible that he changed the stories and that he thereby will alter the fate of Storybrooke and the characters. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
And for those of you who don't know this, I know somebody in England uncovered one of the fairy tales that was in the book was called The Golden Bird.
Yes, I actually freeze-framed, and it's high definition, and so you can actually read the story. And I have kind of a 720p rip of the screen, so it's not as detailed as a true HD version. But you could read. So I saw the word bird. I saw king, cage, gold, and so it is. So what is this fairy tale about?
I've still got it on my DVR. Now I'm going to, and I taped it in HD. So now I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
Well, see, and I read the synopsis on the fairy tale to a certain point, and then I kind of squirrel. And
it's a grim, it's a story by the Grimm brothers, right?
Well, yes. And the whole theory or the story starts with a magical tree that has golden apples. There we go, our apple tree again. Mm-hmm. And they're very precious apples. So obviously they count the apples every day to make sure none of them are missing. And then one day they notice that one apple is missing. Mm-hmm. And so one of the princes, the son of the king, goes off to find the thief of this apple thief. And then they notice the second night, again, another apple is missing. So the king's second son is sent out to go find this. And then the youngest son is like, I'm going to sit under the tree and I'm going to see once and for all, you know, where apple thief is going. And he notices it's a golden bird that comes to take the golden apple. And so he follows the bird. And that's about as far as I got.
Okay, well, I'll read the rest of the story. He tries to shoot the bird, but it only knocks a feather off. The feather is so valuable, it's a golden feather, that the king decides that he must have the bird. He sends his three sons, one after another, to capture the priceless golden bird. The sons each meet a talking fox who gives them advice for their quest, to choose a bad inn over a brightly lit and merry one. The first two sons ignore the advice and, in the pleasant inn, abandon their quest. It's kind of the temptation for the easy road. The third son obeys the fox, but when the fox advises him to take the golden bird in a wooden cage rather than a golden one, he disobeys, and the golden bird rouses the castle, resulting in his capture. He is sent after the golden horse as a condition for sparing his life. The fox advises him to use a wooden saddle rather than a golden one, but he fails again. He is sent after the princess from the golden castle. The fox advises him not to let her say farewell to her parents, but he disobeys, and the prince's father orders him to remove a hill as the price of his life. The fox removes it, and then as they set out, the fox, by the way, sounds a bit like Mr. Golden here. The fox removes it, and then as they set out, he advises the prince how to keep all the things he has won. It then asks the prince to shoot it and cut off its head. When the prince refuses, it warns him against buying gallows flesh and sitting on the edge of wells. Ooh, the edge of wells. He finds that his brothers, who have been carousing and living sinfully in the meantime, are to be hanged on the gallows and buys their liberty. They find out what he has done. When he sits on a well's edge, they push him in. They take the things and... this sounds like the Old Testament story of... what's his name? And
Joseph.
Joseph. They take the things and the princes and bring them to their father. However, the bird, the horse, and the princes all grieve for the prince. The fox rescues the prince. When he returns to his father's castle dressed in a beggar's cloak, the bird, the horse, and the princes all recognize him... And the princess all recognize him as the man who won them and become cheerful again. His brothers are put to death and he marries the princess. Mm. Finally, the third son cuts off the fox's head and feet at the creature's request. The fox is revealed to be a man, the brother of the princess. Tum, tum, tum. Mm. Wow, that's a great story.
Maybe August is the prince in this instance. And his story is yet to come, so maybe he is the prince and the from the golden bird, and maybe that's his story.
Could very well be. There's been a lot of speculation about his identity. a lot of people was like, oh, it's probably Henry from the future, because they have so much in common. They both have this obsession with this book, and there's some other kind of like similarities. But then again, there's this kind of flirty relationship, or the flirting with Emma, which would be very wrong in many ways. And so that's discarded. And then there's still people that believe that he's the wolf. And I don't know why, because I think that's not the case. But you might be right, Deborah. This might be a prince that we haven't discovered yet. Some people say it's one of the Brothers Grimm. It's like, nah.
I read something that, what if he is the boy that found Emma as a baby on the road?
That could very well be.
And that would be, of course, he would still be connected to Storybrooke in some way that we don't know. Because how did, remember Rumpelstiltskin, then she was given Rumpelstiltskin, or Mr. Gold, to give to Regina. So the boy has to be connected to all of them still in some way. But, you know, if he's only a few years older than she is, then that would be a possibility. But then there's all this talk about his name.
Yeah.
August W. Booth. I mean, of all the names in the world, why August W. Booth?
Wayne Booth. Wayne. W stands for Wayne. Some people speculated this might be an anagram. And so I used, I kid you not, I spent about 2 hours with an anagram solver on the internet. I'm not kidding you. And it gives you the most outrageous versions. It's like the most crazy thing, like the boat house is free and blah, blah, blah. And there's no phrase that you can make with those words that makes any sense. So I don't think it's an anagram. But it was a fun exercise. I didn't even know that there were anagram solvers, but there are.
Well, I looked at a fan, a Once Upon a Time fan page, and they were talking, they have a poll, what you think his name is important.
Okay.
And their choices, that it refers to John Wilkes Booth, President Lincoln's assassination, which I don't know, that's kind of weak, refers to August, meaning majestic, and Wayne, which sounds like Wayne, W-A-N-E, so he may be bringing an end to the evil queen. I mean, you know. Refers to Augustus, the emperor of Rome, who had the power to supervise public morality. Refers to playwrights, two different playwrights, both named August. Refers to Booth, meaning a temporary shelter, referring to the wardrobe where the newborn Emma was placed. Refers to Wayne Booth, the literary critic, who coined the term unreliable narrator. And then the last choice is it's an anagram of something.
I had a few more theories, from fan theories, one of which says that he might be Pinocchio.
Oh, I saw that too.
Because at one point he says that he never lies. But then I'm like, didn't Pinocchio lie all the time? So.
But not only that, you would assume Pinocchio would be in Storybrooke 2 somewhere, because he was also affected by the curse, unless Pinocchio was wooden and wasn't affected by curses, and maybe he is the boy and he was like, I'm lost and wandering around. I find this kid and, you know, grow up, and who knows? But
some people think that he is Henry's father, but I was like, no, because then Emma would recognize him.
Well, yeah, that's far-fetched, you know. But have you ever known somebody to change that much in 10 years where you don't recognize them?
Not to this point. Come on.
No. I know.
His father. A lot happened between the two, and I suppose that you can imagine. Well, no, let's not go there. But anyway, it's I don't think it's very likely. Some people say that it might be a reference to the American literary critic Wayne C. Booth. Literary critic, he's a writer, so could be.
It was just such a full name. I don't know that the fact that he didn't just say, hi, my name is Joe. You know, it was like, you know, Catherine. All we know is her name is Catherine. But for them to say August W. Booth, Wayne Booth. I mean, I don't know. It made me feel like there was some purpose to that name. Like I was supposed to go, oh, I got it, you know, but I didn't.
Well, in one of my discussions outside of this is one of my friends suggested that he's in all likelihood, he's a storyteller from one of the fairy tales. He's a narrator.
Yeah.
So So I was like, well, you know, what stories have a narrator actively in the story? And I'm like, well, and here's a Disney one that pops straight to my head, but probably has nothing to do with it, is the Tale of Ichabod Crane and Sleepy Hollow, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I'm like, could he be Brown Bones? Could he be Ichabod? Could he, you know, could he be a narrator in a weird sense like that? But who knows? It's far-fetched. That's my far-fetched one.
Mike has an interesting theory in the chat room. He says Gus, nickname for August, was one of the mice in Cinderella.
He is not Gus.
I don't think he's.
Oh,
he's got...
I hate that character.
I just remembered when we were talking about the well that my sister Shelley asked us to talk about something, and I completely forgot to mention it.
Yes,
about plaque that was written next to the well.
Yeah, it was another freeze frame moment. Yeah,
right. She even sent me the picture. So I have the text. The well says, for centuries, local legend has claimed that mythical waters run beneath this great land. It is said that these waters possess the power to return that which is lost to its rightful place. If you have lost something precious to you, drink from this well and bear witness to this miracle, as what is missing shall be returned.
Mm-hmm. Precious.
Yeah, there's precious, which is always a child, which... She isn't seeing, Emma's not seeing Henry right now. And then after she drinks from the well, she does.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, you know, the whole water theme in this episode, they put so much thought into that little paragraph.
Yeah.
You know, what it says.
And while they are at the well, doesn't August say that he was the one who wrote that? Or did I misinterpret that? I got the impression that he was actually the guy who wrote the text on that plaque.
No, but he seems to spend a lot of time at the well.
Hmm. So what has he lost? Would he have lost something?
Maybe Henry is his. I don't know how that could be possible, but I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. I thought that was, to me, that was... Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe it's just to directly reflect the waters that Prince Charming went into, because the water that he went into, it said it will return something that is lost. And so here's water in the well again. Maybe I'm just thinking too hard.
Could the well also play a role in somehow the whole resolution of the David Mary Margaret problem? Because they... have lost each other, basically.
Well, that's what I read it the first time. I thought exactly. It sounds like the original curse was to separate people who love each other, and so they're lost. And Regina has said, you'd be surprised how easy it is to get lost in this town. And so when I read that, I thought, this sounds like a cure for the curse in a way, you know, to bring people back together.
It could be, a cure for the potion Mary Margaret drank to forget. It could be the well water.
Yes, indeed.
So he needs to go back and get some of that water and take it and pour it on Snow White's head when he finds it.
And she'll turn into gold. Oh, no, wait a second. No, but then this well would be extremely dangerous for Regina. She might want to somehow, I don't know, pour concrete in it.
Strychnine.
Yeah. Or bulldoze it and put up a new well.
Who knows? Yeah. With approved water.
She could say, legally, as the mayor of this town, it's tainted water and we can't let you drink from it because it's old water and it's been tested unsanitary. She could put a town ordinance on the well that nobody's supposed to drink from it.
And I'm always thinking, you know, there's a well. So what's underneath? Could there be something like a hidden cave or something? I still want to see a cave. We've seen them going underground in that abandoned mine, but could there be something more underneath the literally like a hidden layer of the town where something might happen? I don't know. I keep thinking of the way that Lost ended, where they discover this this fountain of youth, this pool of water that can basically give people, well, almost eternal life or heal people. And then it appears to be connected to this big underground cave, and then that's basically where the secret of the island is. And I'm thinking, could we see the equivalent of this here in Storybrooke, and that this well might actually be part of I'm thinking cave, but it's just more by intuition. I want to go in that well, and I want to see what's there. And I want to know the secret of this water. Where does it come from? What's the source? But perhaps the well is the source. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, you know what?
Probably setting us up.
Yeah. Well, one thing. Can I switch topics to something I told you to watch for in this episode before you watched it? The flowers. And was I not right? I was watching this episode the first time, because I watched it at least twice, if not three times, and it kept focusing on flowers at least 5 to 6 times during the episode.
Oh, there's an interesting detail. Can I play my detail jingle? Can I play my jingle?
Yes, go ahead.
I love my jingles.
Glass.
Every story needs a memorable detail.
Yeah, and the flowers are definitely a memorable detail. So tell us about the flowers.
Well, and I'm not a flower person, so to speak. So, but I kept noticing they kept focusing on these flowers, and both in Regina's office, mm-hmm. and then again in David and Catherine's house. And so I was like, well, what's the symbolism? I understand tulips, you know, because you'll see where Catherine puts the letter that she writes to David. She puts it next to a vase of tulips.
Yes,
and tulips is a symbol of an unending love, and you know it's kind of a
elegance, grace, yeah.
But then, so I'm like, well, why do they keep focusing on these tulips? Because they did it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back, and I'm like, well, what is Regina farming there in her office? And I couldn't figure it out because I don't know. And finally, somebody told me it is a flycatcher.
Exactly. They're carnivorous plants. And I laughed out loud when I saw them, because we've never seen flowers in a room. It's usually black and white. And then I was like, these green, big green things. And I was like, wait a minute, carnivorous plants. That is too funny.
Yes. And the whole premise of that flower is that it has like a sweet nectar at the bottom of it, and it lures flies in, and they get trapped and they can't come out.
Oh, wow. Symbol for Storybrooke then.
Yeah.
They can't get out.
So, yeah, now I have to watch the flowers, because it seems like all the flowers also, they don't bring in the flowers unless there's symbolic meaning behind the flowers.
Probably. Yes, I think so too. And we've seen the rose, of course, in the previous episode. Gaston is turned into a rose. Red rose symbolizes love, passion, desire, and respect, according to this list of meanings. The tulip, indeed, symbolizes irresistible love or perfect love.
Mm-hmm.
And it symbolizes my country, of course, Holland.
Well, and I think tulips also represent a renewing, a spring, because they're a spring flower.
Mm-hmm.
You only see them in the springtime, so it to me, it's a dawn of a new love, or a dawn of a new season.
Mm-hmm. And then there's, of course, the apple blossom. Also means like rebirth and better things to come. And I'm not sure if we've seen the apple tree in Regina's garden, but there was no blossom yet. By the way, the whole story actually seems to be in happening in the fall right now. Didn't we see these brown leaves at one point?
No, that doesn't, because it's just right after Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay.
I think they're trying to track, you know, what our seasons are when it's airing.
Okay, so they're just old leaves, which means that we're heading for spring. So
yes,
there might be some new hope. And according to the writers in one of their interviews, this Lost was about redemption, whereas this series is all about hope. I like that. And it's what's in this first jingle that I have, the fairy tales, you know, that they are necessary. Stories are necessary because they give people hope. And that's exactly what seems to be missing in the whole relationship between David and and Mary Margaret. There is a little bit of hope, and then it's immediately thwarted by their own stupid choices. And what's going to be the future now that what's her name, Abigail, is gone, mm-hmm. or Catherine, I should say, that creates an open space for this relationship. So what are they going to do? I'm thinking this might actually kick David back into gear, into his valiant prince mode, and he will go search for Catherine, and he will realize how much he misses her. Don't you think?
I have a spoiler.
You have spoilers. Oh gosh.
Episode.
Okay. Well, we're gonna move over to the spoiler section. So if you don't want to hear what's next, please stop the recording here. I'll say goodbye. Just go over to onceuponatime.sqpn.com for previous episodes and future episodes. And if you've seen future episodes and you want to still hear what Deborah is about to reveal, then you can also listen back to the episode there. Leave us a review on iTunes, and we will see you soon in a new episode. Okay, 3, 2, 1, spoiler time.
Okay. So the spoiler that I've seen, and the next episode is about Red, actually.
Ooh, good.
But
finally.
The Storybrooke's storyline has Catherine is still missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they suspect, because of the whole dramatic trauma between Mary Margaret and Catherine at the school, they blame the disappearance on Mary Margaret, and they accuse her of murder and arrest her. And Emma has to arrest her for murder. This is a spoiler I read.
Wow.
Whether or not. Yeah. So it's unfortunately Mary Margaret's in for even worse times than she had, in the last episode.
Oh, my goodness.
So I don't know if David's actually going to be able
what
to,
going to do.
Help. Yeah, because I don't know if anybody's mentioned anything about David yet, and who knows. So,
I show that one is in 2 weeks, and the one next week is Grumpy.
Oh, that's right.
Well, Grumpy in his romance.
Okay.
Fairy tale romance.
So, I'm getting confused. This episode number was 13, right?
Right.
The next one is called Dreamy.
Dreamy.
Oh, that's right.
So that one is about Grumpy. And then the Ruby episode is episode number 15.
Right here. And I noticed when looking that, what is her name? Emily Abel is credited in the next episode.
So there are pictures of her in the, with the dwarves.
And who was she again? Emily Bell?
Bell.
She was Belle.
Oh, Belle, sorry. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh. So I'm excited that we might see Belle again, that she's not, gone. You know, they don't just show her to her once and then like a year later, oh, there she is.
Yeah, she's locked in this room. There you go.
Okay, here's the trailer for episode 14, the promo.
Who were fairy tales or to be believed?
I know there has been lies and defeat.
Comes a shocking reality.
She's just gone?
All new 2 weeks from tonight. One of their own has disappeared.
You're looking for someone with a motive.
She's got one a mile high.
And everyone's a suspect.
I need you to tell me everything.
ABC's Once Upon a Time, all new Sunday, March 4th at 8/7.
Huh, okay. Interesting. So it's the search for
Catherine.
And
that's the thing. Do you think they really I don't think she's dead. I think she's going to turn
no,
up. I think
no, certainly not.
You know, they wouldn't have shown us that she has someone to be estranged from if they were just going to kill her off.
No.
They wouldn't have developed her. So it'd be interesting. More, what did you say? More trauma for our
poor
heroine. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. She gets to go. From what I've seen, she gets arrested for the suspected murder of Catherine.
Maybe this will give David a chance to step up and, solve the mystery and be the hero and make a decision.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. I really hope so. All this will be resolved before the end of the season, and I just can't wait to see what. How many episodes do we still have? We've got Dreamy, Red Handed, Heart of Darkness, Hat Trick, Stable
like
Boy, and then 19, 20, 21, 22. Wow!
Right.
Stable Boy. Interesting. Could that be August? Stable Boy.
Could be.
And what about the Hat Trick? Heart of Darkness. That's got to do with the hearts. That should be scary. Someone else is going to lose his heart. Perhaps, Heart of Darkness. Could that be Regina's story?
I'm thinking it heart. Gotta be her.
Ooh, I like it. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode. You can find Deborah on her podcast, iPilgrim, and Lisa and her sister Shelley blog together at Sound Mind and Spirit. Links in the show notes. We welcome your theories if you want to share your wild speculation, or you've noticed something that we missed. Let us know on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com, or you can also let us know very easily via Twitter. We have a Twitter account, onceuponatimepc. PC stands for podcast, not for personal computer. So Once Upon a Time PC on Twitter. We also have a Facebook page. We don't really update it that much. It's kind of hard to keep track of all these different platforms. But and then, of course, there's the good old-fashioned email, in case you don't trust all those newfangled social networks. And the address is onceuponatime@sqpn.com. onceuponatime@sqpn.com. If you like what we do, you want to support us, consider becoming a friend of SQPN. More information on the website. And you can always help us by supporting our sponsors. If you want to start a website or a blog, just click on that Bluehost banner to set it up. It's just $6.95 per month. I like it. It's a really great service. And you can start your own Once Upon a Time blog, become rich and famous for just $6.95 per month. And you get your own .com domain name with that. And if you ever go shopping at Amazon, there's this little Amazon banner on our website that you can click. It will bring you to the Amazon website. And then that will give us a little bit of kickback from Amazon's profits. So that's also another way in which you can help us. Thanks for your support. Thanks for listening. See you soon on another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.